Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to Seriously, the podcast from The New Statesman that takes pop culture seriously.
I'm Caroline Crampton.
And I'm Anna Leskovich.
This week we're going to be talking about the film Certain Women and the new BBC Three drama Cleek.
Caroline has also watched the MTV series Sweet Vicious for the first time, so she'll be telling us how that went later in the show. Hello.
Hello.
Thanks to everyone who emailed in with suggestions for their own Seriously Awards. Thank you to Lucy, who got in touch to say her suggestions include the Most Irritating Final Four Words Award to, yeah, you guessed it, Gilmore Girls. She's put, we waited 9 years for that. I mean, I'm kind of sympathetic to the Final Four Words. And then she also says Biggest Betrayal, which we awarded to Fleabag and Girls. Mm. She would suggest Paul Hollywood joining Channel 4's Bake Off, which fair, is quite a good one.
Fair point. We've also had some submissions from Rosie, who says, my awards of 2017 are Actor Most Overshadowed by a Costume goes to Tom Hardy in Taboo. She says, I stopped watching after the third episode when I realised that I was more interested in Tom's hat and coat than any of the plot or relationships. And then, most surprisingly emotional film, Adult Life Skills. From the trailer, I thought this would be a silly, low-key comedy, which it was, but also slightly heartbreaking, and I alternated between laughing and crying for the entire film. And finally, Best Skins alumnus goes to Dev Patel. If you'd told me 10 years ago when I was watching Skins that Anwar would be the cast member I would most fancy in the future, I would not have believed it.
We also have one from Philippa who just recommends a misogyny award for Sherlock. Would have been a long shortlist, but Sherlock a deserving winner, I feel.
Yeah, so thanks very much for everyone who sent in award nominations. I think despite the fact that it really messed up our sleep schedules, it was totally worth doing an award special last week.
Yeah, it was really quite an award season to stick around for, wasn't it? So...
Most definitely, yeah. The first thing we're going to talk about this week is Certain Women, which is a film that's written and directed by Kelly Reichardt. It's loosely based on the short stories of Miley Malloy and tells three loosely connected tales of different women in the American Northwest. It stars Laura Dern, Michelle Williams, Lily Gladstone, and Kristen Stewart.
Let's you and I make an effort to be nice to your mom today.
Why?
Because neither of us did very well without her.
Wondering about the sandstone in the front yard. I mean, if you wanted to get rid of it, we'd take it off your hands.
You don't have to sell it if you don't want to. It's just that Gina wants this new house to be authentic.
Hey, Will, good news. Your lawyer's here.
No one understands what my life has become.
To keep you from getting to work or anything. I just knew if I didn't start driving, I wasn't going to see you again. Didn't want that.
It'd be so lovely to think that if I were a man, people would listen and say, okay. It would be so restful.
It's quite an unusual film, isn't it? Because it's quite sparse in terms of dialogue. It's quite slow moving. I feel like the landscapes kind of step up to fill in what the dialogue can't provide. And It won the London Film Festival's Best Film Award.
Oh, did it? I didn't realise that.
Yeah, so although it's actually not been much buzz around this film in general, that was quite a big award that it did win.
I feel like the very opening moments of this film really sum it up for you, which is where the camera lingers on this long shot of a train coming through, I think it's Montana, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Through the kind of Montana landscape with big prairie fields and mountains in the background and this, you know, train that starts really far away. And then when you first see the shot, you're like, they're not going to stay on this same shot for all the time it would take for the train to get right to the front of the screen, are they? But they do.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're like, okay, it's that kind of film.
But it's sort of quite unpretentious at the same time, I think, because even though you do have these sometimes fairly indulgent shots, I feel like as you start to settle into the film, the landscape becomes so important to the stories that are being told that you can't begrudge any of those long lingering shots.
Yeah, so it is based on several short stories, and I feel like knowing that really helped me understand it. Because in the same way that a few of the short story collections that we've talked about recently, Fen and The Shore, both do this thing of connecting the stories through things other than characters necessarily,
mm-hmm.
by atmosphere or place, that's what this film does. So it's probably even wrong to say that in the film the stories are loosely connected, because they're connected in as much only that you see a character from a previous section walking past once in the background of a different one. You know, there's no meetings, there's no interactions between the main protagonists.
But you do therefore get this sense of complexity, because you know that the husband of the main character of one section can have an affair with the main character of another section, and it can barely be discussed, but it deepens your understanding of those characters and basically makes the stories more complicated. And I think it's done with quite a good lightness of touch.
No, absolutely, because I spent a while after I saw this film thinking about whether I genuinely really liked this film or whether was I just in the right mood for it. Because I could see how if I was in a more impatient kind of mood, I might have been annoyed with its long shots and its apparent plotlessness and this kind of thing. And then I thought about it more and I decided that actually, no, I did really like the film and I would like it no matter how I was feeling at the time. Because, and you put your finger on it, was saying it is not pretentious. We're probably making it sound like it is with its, you know, landscape, cinematography and all this kind of stuff. But it's just not like that. It's very, very human in scale and very warm. And even though you still really feel like you know nothing about the protagonist, like for instance, in the third segment, the one with Lily Gladstone and Kristen Stewart, you don't ever find out what Lily Gladstone's character is called. She doesn't have a name. She's just in the credits. I think she's just there as the rancher.
Yeah.
So that's the level of remoteness you have.
But I think you could compare and contrast it to something like The Revenant, which was all about those lingering shots with no cuts and meant to be, you know, very much about the landscape. And they're just so different, because I feel like Certain Women is about normal people and normal lives, and there's no sensationalism, and it is about trying to get into, for example, the daily routine of this rancher, and you see the same shots over and over again, and you see how the landscape changes minutely shot to shot. There's something really commendable about that, because there is something that feels important about getting to know the texture of someone's daily life in a way that a lot of the things in The Revenant I just found to be a bit ridiculous and pretentious and not really serving anything.
Well, that's the point, isn't it? In Certain Women, all of that is in service of enhancing your understanding. So the fact that we see Lily Gladstone and her little dog, you know, zooming around this massive farm completely...
I love those shots.
It's beautiful. But, it just serves to underline that she's completely alone all of the time in her working life. And, you know, she's there in a kind of short-term winter employee. She doesn't know anyone else in the town. That's why she behaves like she does in relation to Kristen Stewart. You know, so that actually serves a purpose. It makes you understand another character as well. And the same with, in the second story, the Michelle Williams one, she and her husband are building this house. She's really obsessed with getting this old sandstone.
She wants some, quote, authentic sandstone, doesn't she, to build her home from, to try and sort of blend into the natural environment, because she kind of sticks out like a sore thumb in her, sweaty Betty.
Yeah, exactly.
jogging gear.
She's really obsessed with just getting the stone. And for a while you're like, I don't care about this. Why does the stone matter? And then you realise that actually it's all about her portrayal of herself as, quote, authentic. When actually, so at the beginning of her little story, you see her just walking really slowly, wearing all of her super fancy running gear, smoking. You're like, you're clearly a health freak. Why have you just gone for a quiet walk to have a cigarette? And then she lies when she comes back, when her husband's like, how was your run? She's like, really good, cold, mm-hmm. hard, but really good. And then right at the very end of her segment, you see her get so frustrated and pissed off that she just has a cigarette and a glass of wine in full view in front of everybody.
Mm-hmm.
You're like, okay, so you've finally decided to stop pretending and just be who you actually are.
I really liked all three of these stories, actually. I thought the Laura Dern story at the beginning is really complex for its sort of portrayal of like workplace sexism at the same time as like a lot of other things. But it's just, I really liked the way that that just kind of gently was woven into the narrative, her saying things like, you know, I could just be a male lawyer and people would listen to me when I said that there was nothing more we could do for your case, and wow, that would be amazing. And I loved the final one as well. And Lily Gladstone, I think it's a shame she wasn't nominated for more acting awards for this role. Just, you look at her, and I remember in Olivia Lang's The Lonely City, she talks about when you're so lonely, being worried that you physically repulse other people with your loneliness.
Yeah.
And you make people sort of want to cringe away from you. And Lily Gladstone is so good at capturing that feeling, both the fear of coming across that way and the intensity of wanting to get to know someone that can make you come across that way.
The premise of that story is that, you know, she's in this really lonely rural place working as a rancher. Kristen Stewart's character is driving 4 hours each way to teach a, you know, adult education class in this town. And Lily Gladstone's character wanders into this class one day and finds that she has a bit of a connection. They go to a diner after each class and they seem to be getting on. And then one day Kristen Stewart just doesn't turn up. So she, without seemingly really hesitating, she just gets in her truck and drives all the way to where Kristen Stewart lives, like wanders around, tries to find her, sleeps overnight in her truck, and then eventually finds her on the way to work the next morning. And they have this heart-wrenching exchange where Kristen Stewart is like, oh, you're here.
Mm.
Oh.
And you sort of know when you're watching it as well that Kristen Stewart doesn't feel anything for the Lily Gladstone character. It's very, the power dynamic is so one-sided the whole way through. And that's what's so awkward about it to watch, because I think you can quite usefully almost compare this film to Moonlight, which is another film in three distinct parts, which has these, you know, romantic diner scenes in the final third. And in certain women, it's so much more horrible and you don't want to look. Whereas in Moonlight, because you know that this is a real romance, you know that the love is reciprocated, even when Chiron's being really vulnerable and saying something like, I haven't been with another man since you. It doesn't make you want to like look away from the screen in shame, because you know that it's real. With this, it's a lot more awkward and a lot more uncomfortable.
And that's where the filming style comes in as well, because in between each of these diner scenes, where, as you mentioned in the awards special, there's this like awful power imbalance of like Kristen Stewart is always eating and Lily Gladstone never is, and she always like picks up something to eat on the way home.
She's the same thing that Kristen Stewart eats in the diner, but in her car, and it's like a more budget version. Yeah. And it's just so sad.
But so in between each of those scenes, you see her completely alone, like tending to the horses, like driving around this snowy landscape. And you can imagine all of the thinking time she has while she's doing her quite mundane, repetitive job to think about the next encounter at the diner and how it might go and what it might mean and all of this.
Yeah.
So every time there's another one, you're like, oh my God, she's thought about this for 3 whole days.
Yeah.
This is so important to her, and it's so not to Kristen Stewart. Yeah.
She just wants to get her legal degree.
Yeah.
Yeah. I really, really enjoyed this film, and it did make me want to read the short stories as well. So it's definitely worth going to see if you can make it to the cinema and see it.
It really is. And just to go back to something that I said when we were in the thick of Oscar nominee watching, this is such an amazing antidote to this. I think I said that I just really wanted to watch a film about some made-up people.
Yeah.
And this is exactly that film.
Yeah.
Everyone in it is fictional.
Yeah.
Some of them don't even have names or backstories. It's like a cleansing balm.
Next, we're going to talk about the BBC Three drama Clique. Set in Edinburgh University, it follows two girls who are in their first year of uni childhood best friends, Holly and Georgia. They find themselves drawn to an elite clique of third year girls who all seem to be under the influence of mysterious Professor McDermid.
So this is something that we've been anticipating for a while, right? Mm-hmm. Because it comes from Jess Britton, who was a writer for Skins, and this is her new project. I think she's now 27, she's in her late 20s. And in interviews, she's been asked a lot, you know, so what does the writer of defining teen drama Skins do next? And she was like, well, I'm still just obsessed with the way youth is always portrayed as positive and radiant. And I just really wanted to show that it's not like that at all. Mm-hmm. And so in Clique, she's created this apparently really normal looking world with what is obviously a very dark undercurrent. And also one that fetishizes youth and beauty in a really interesting way. And I think it's amazing.
Yeah, so it starts off with these two girls, Holly and Georgia, who I think have basically just arrived at university. It's like a month into their first term.
Yeah, because don't they mention that Georgia slept with someone in Freshers' Week and she's still hopeful that he might call her back? Like, it's that kind of amount of time.
Yeah, yeah. I think one of them, I think Holly even says, you know, that was a month ago. So they're still finding their feet, but they've sort of purged themselves of like the Freshers' Week, you know, complete fear and mass drinking to just get through the days. But it's when they're going to their first macroeconomics lecture, which is led by this very mysterious, very forthright Professor McDermid. I thought, was this a reference to Val McDermid when they were like,
she's Scottish as well, Scottish writer. Yeah.
And they were like, oh, who is he? And then they're like, oh, you mean she? Who is she? You know, and she's this like massively influential, successful academic, but she's also young and beautiful. Is it the night before that lecture or something? They start to glimpse these girls at a party who just are impossibly glamorous looking girls, basically. And then they see those same girls at this lecture when Professor McDermid is talking about her scheme for women in power. Basically, she gives a long speech about how feminism is bullshit and how women have to like take power for themselves, and then introduces these very glamorous, powerful looking women.
Yeah, so their first encounter with the third year girls the night before is when Georgia's overindulged and Holly's trying to get her out of a club and stuff, and the girls are like, oh, you know, take our car, we have this car and this driver that's always waiting for us, he'll take you home, no worries, kind of thing. And it's so interesting, and this is where I think the writing is so good, because if you've been in a situation anything like that, you know how magic that seems to just have someone be like, my car's right here, just take it. It just seems like the solution to an impossible problem,
especially at university where like most people don't really drive and
or have the money for cabs on demand, all this kind of stuff.
Yeah,
that immediately fixes these girls in your mind as like, they are rich, they are powerful, and they don't give a fuck, you know. That's their emblem, as it were. And then Holly and Georgia get drawn deeper into this whole thing, because it turns out these girls are all interns in Professor McDermid's scheme. So they've got an added level of status associated with success in this really competitive class. And Georgia, in the first episode, starts to think, I want to be one of them. Basically, I want to join the clique. I want to go for the internship.
Yeah, and though Holly has been doubts. Sort of had all these lingering gazes at them, and you know that she wants it too, but she's sort of a bit more fearful than Georgia, and is kind of portrayed as someone who's a bit more look before you leap, and is conflicted between wanting to do it and also wanting to stay out of a very dark and messy looking situation. And that's what's pulling at their friendship, because, you know, Georgia is saying, well, you're just jealous, I've made it into this clique. And I think Holly feels a bit like, well, I introduced you to these people, I took you to that lecture, you didn't even know what it was, you said you only took it because of me, and also I'm genuinely concerned for your safety.
Yeah,
it's this double-edged sword of like, no, I was here first, and also neither of us should be here. I think that's quite relatable when you're a teenager. They're a little older, but I think when you're a teenager and you're doing things for the first time, there can be that push and pull where you're like, oh, this is scary, but also I want to do it.
And I want to be the first at it. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
There's a very distinctive filming style and costuming style in this show.
It's all very dark.
It's all very dark, with lots of like red lipstick seen through a slightly bluey filter on the camera. There's a particular scene where they end up at this party in this random mansion, and everyone's like stripping off their clothes and jumping into the swimming pool in their underwear, and then mysteriously none of their eye makeup runs.
Was the implication of this pool that it was a ket pool, a pool of ketamine? Or have I completely like misinterpreted?
No, she took a tablet.
Right, but then she's like, this pool is weird. And someone says, like, it's like Ket, and then someone's like, it is Ket, and then, but, like, is that how these things work? Surely not.
Okay, I didn't get that, but I'm
going to Google it now. I'm going back and, like, look at the subtitles, and if I'm completely wrong, I'm going to edit it out of the podcast, because I'll look like a kid who knows nothing about drugs. But I was just like, what the fuck? And then the next day, she was like, oh, that pool really fucked me up.
Oh, okay, maybe it was.
So I didn't, I just didn't get that. There are some moments like that in this program where I'm a bit like, wait, what? What are you talking about?
And that actually gave me the reassuring note that, like, it is still a BBC drama.
Yeah, definitely. And I think for me, a lot of, like, really, like, fucked up shit happens in this episode, right? And we don't want to give too many spoilers away because the last kind of 10 minutes are quite, like, violent and stressful.
Yeah.
And...
but also, I think for their maximum impact, you need to have no idea what's coming.
Yeah. So. But for me, whether those things become indulgent, let's look at some skinny girls in, like, dangerous or objectifying or violent situations, for it to become more than that, the payoff has to be good in the next few episodes.
Yeah.
And I don't know where they're going with it. I might be like, oh, wow, these revelations were so worth it. Or it might be a bit of a damp squib, you know, like, I can't really tell which way it's going at the moment.
I wanted to compare this, actually, to The Demon Headmaster. Did you ever watch it?
Yeah, of course. Just pull that reference out of the bag.
Yeah, so if any listeners remember that, this actually has a lot in common with it, in the sense that there's, like, a kind of charismatic, older teacher figure.
Professor McDermott is the Demon Headmaster in this
essentially
analogy.
Yes, and, like, all of these really attract... Do you remember how in The Demon Headmaster all of the kids who'd, like, fallen under the headmaster's sway were just much more beautiful?
Were they, like, blonde?
They were always
pointed.
Blonde, and their uniforms were really tidy and they just looked better, and the, like, characters that you were following always just looked a bit scruffy and a bit scrappy.
Yeah.
And obviously that's why you found them relatable, but yeah, so I the whole time I felt a bit like, okay, this is like a really cool, sexy version.
Yeah. Can I sound the recurring handsome BBC Three actor alarm?
Yep. Oh, yeah.
Guy from New Blood, who was only very briefly in this episode.
In a bad wig.
Yeah, oh, was it a wig? I thought it was bad dye, but maybe it was a bad wig.
I thought it was a wig.
And sort of like a questionable leather jacket. He's like one of the party goers at the weird glass mansion pool scene. And he was kind of like, oh yeah, everyone else here's a cunt, like, I'm a nice guy kind of vibes. Which I'd be keen to see more of. He can tell me he's not a cunt some more, that's fine.
But it's also suspicious though. This is the thing with this show, that I immediately identified with Holly and her worry that everyone might be in some way going to hurt her.
I mean, not a bad instinct.
But I'm definitely more of a Holly than a Georgia in the sense that, like, I would not jump into a swimming pool in my underwear with a load of people I'd never met.
No, no way. I'm just really curious to see where it goes next, basically, because this could either be, like, a pile of crap or something really, really cool, depending on where it goes next for me.
Mm, yeah.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hit me.
So last week, I recommended that Caroline check out the MTV web series Sweet Vicious. That's sweet slash vicious. So Caroline, did you do that?
I did indeed. And it's so cool. I really enjoyed it.
So a little brief explanation if you didn't hear last week. This is a campus comedy thriller starring two women who are basically on a weird vengeance mission against all men who have committed sexual assault on their campus. Is that a brief explanation?
Yeah, and it's definitely got things in common with like Kick-Ass, where an unlikely person, in this case a sorority girl who looks like she might be a cheerleader, dons a mask and gets a flick knife and starts like cutting people up. And she does this because, you know, she has been assaulted and she realizes that like she is by no means the only woman to have had this happen to her. And as I think it was maybe a couple of years ago when the whole like campus rape thing really blew up in America, particularly, wasn't it? It really became a mainstream media story. She realizes that the university is not taking it seriously, like they're not pursuing, even when women do come forward to complain about it, they just get fobbed off or their complaints get put on file because the rich white boys have got rich white fathers who are influential and nothing really ever happens. So
yeah,
she takes matters,
story,
she takes matters into her own hands,
yeah,
and becomes a kind of ninja justice warrior. And she teams up with Ophelia, who's a kind of stoner dropout computer hacker type, because Ophelia accidentally finds out her identity.
Yeah.
And they team up to fight crime, essentially.
Yeah, it's great. So that's the like unfamiliar twist on this like sort of fairly familiar story. And it's like quite wacky and colourful, isn't it? It's quite
It's got some of the slightly comic booky elements of something like Scott Pilgrim.
Yeah.
Which I really liked.
Definitely.
I also really liked the character of Ophelia, just generally.
I think she's a bit like a Diablo Cody character.
Yeah, she is. I really like her friend Harris.
Yes,
I think he's awesome. That he's one of the few, I don't know who the actor is, I should know that, but he's one of the few actors I've seen in recent years who can deliver the line, bitch please, in a way that isn't like,
insufferable.
Yeah,
that's great. Even when it's violent, it is that sort of overly stylized violence that means it never feels like fully dangerous, this program, but it does feel like fun and like very satisfying in the way that it treats revenge.
But it does have more complexity sometimes than that. Like in the first episode, Jules, her name is, the sorority girl, is in the middle of like wreaking vengeance on some guy, and he overpowers her and he starts strangling her, and she starts having flashbacks to when the guy who raped her held her down, and she kind of loses the confidence and the power she normally has to fight back briefly, and that kind of subverting of what had previously been a bit like pow wah wah type violence was really powerful.
So overall,
really smart, very very clever.
Great, I'm glad you enjoyed. So what are we doing next week?
Something really similar. No, could not be more different. I'm going to recommend you, I feel like it's a classic of the American film canon. It's called Days of Heaven, and it's a 1978 film by Terrence Malick.
Right.
And it stars Richard Gere, and it's set during the First World War in the Panhandle in Texas, which is like the long, thin bit of Texas that sticks up into Oklahoma, and it's all wheat fields. And it follows this couple and his younger sister, who are from Chicago, and they're poor people. They work in a factory, essentially, and they go south to try and find a better life, and they end up working as itinerant farm labourers on this farm for this rich guy, and it all kind of unfolds from there.
I know that there's a big gap in my film knowledge because I don't think I've ever seen a Terrence Malick movie, so I'm definitely keen to fill it.
If you like looking at wheat fields like moving in the breeze and sometimes clouds, you will love this film.
Can't wait. Thank you. Thanks for listening to this episode of Seriously, the pop culture podcast from The New Statesman.
If you enjoyed the show, why not subscribe to make sure you never miss another episode? We're available in all the usual places you get podcasts, including iTunes, where you could leave us a rating and a review.
Our next event, another Harry Potter quiz on the 14th of March, is now sold out, but you can join the waiting list for tickets at seriouslypod.com/events.
Also on seriouslypod.com, you can find all our back episodes, plus our specials on Home Alone, Gilmore Girls, Harry Potter, Love Actually, and Friends. While you're there, please do our listener survey. It's really helpful for us to know what you do and don't like about the show, and this is the last week that it's going to be open.
We're available many other places on the internet, including on Twitter, Facebook, and Tumblr. We're Seriously Pod on all of them.
We love getting your recommendations for things we should feature on the show, or just hear hearing your thoughts on what we've discussed. Get in touch on social media or email us on seriouslypod@gmail.com.
And if you feel strongly that more pop culture needs to be taken seriously, spread the word and tell your friends and family about the podcast.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Hey y'all, Darius Rucker here. You know, a lot of people ask me, what inspires your music? And one of the big things is a strong sense of place. That's why I love my home state of South Carolina and want to share the awesome things it has to offer. From the beautiful mountains down to the sunny coast, it's got it all. Not to mention two of my personal favorites, great golf and amazing food. Come see why I love this place. Visit DiscoverSouthCarolina.com.